Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution of Juan McCarthy is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Kalina Financial Advisors Limited, Marco's Pizza, Ron's Electric Motors, Bahamas Check Services, and the Digital Transformation Unit.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome back to the... I keep doing that. I don't know why I keep doing that. I keep saying welcome back. It's like I'm introing the show. All right. We are... Welcome to the revolution on Guardian Radio. 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. Okay. We're going to deal with a few things today. All right. And we'll see how thorough we can get. We are going to deal with the ICIJ, okay? Now, before I get into that, let me explain that I had a chance to speak with Ellsworth Johnson yesterday afternoon after it was alleged that he called Prime Minister Brave Davis, a Haitian prime minister, and I was also able to listen to what he said, and he did not call Prime Minister Philip Brave Davis a Haitian prime minister or a Haitian president or any such thing. What he said was that the word on the street in the Haitian underground trafficking circles is that there's a new Haitian president elected in the Bahamas. He did not say that. Any critically thinking person should be able to understand that he did not say that, implying that Mr. Davis is a Haitian prime minister, but he said it to say that that is what they're now spreading as misinformation, and that may be having an uptick in illegal migration in the similar vein that a lot of Haitians who went to the U.S. border were under the mistaken impression that regime change in the United States meant that they could now feel free to seek asylum. Okay? So I try to have accurate information. I'm not always 100%, but I try. Some of y'all don't even try. Information is be really choppy. So I'm seeking to have good information when we do discuss these things on the radio. It's, you know, you're not always going to get all of it all the time, right? You seek to correct that which you don't get right. But I don't like just putting stuff out there in the atmosphere that's just blatantly incorrect. All right? Now, let us talk about a couple of things. And then we're going to talk about the ICIJ. All right? So first, the police have said they're ending the perp walk outside of the South Street Magistrates Court Complex. And I'm going to say that I completely agree with that notion. Sure, you do have your opportunity to have your day in court and to prove that you are not guilty. In fact, the presumption is that you are innocent until proven guilty. However, it would be naive of us and disingenuous of us if we were operating under the impression that seeing someone handcuffed, shackled, escorted to court by numerous police officers, often some whom are armed, does not burn a negative impression of that person in the minds of the public and does not do damage to their reputation. All right? The image is burned into your brain for all time. Who will forget Shane Gibson being shackled at the wrists and the ankles, herded into court, surrounded by police like he's Hannibal Lecter? Who's going to forget that? Same thing with Frank Smith. And it shouldn't only apply to high-profile people. Everybody deserves the basic dignity of being allowed to go to court, make a plea, and let the process play out without searing into the minds of the public this image as if you're some arch criminal who's some great flight risk. Now, if you are Stephen Die Stubbs, right, where people have tried to kill you, you've killed people, I understand that a higher level of security is warranted. But the Nassau, the South Street Magistrate Court Complex was designed so that you do not have to bring suspects through the front door, all right? That was not the case when people were going to court through Bank Lane. But this was designed with a different level of security in mind so that people could not be exposed to the public. So, for instance, you have sometimes families of murder victims gathering outside court, and then the families of those accused of that murder are also at court, and tensions rise, and they're screaming and cussing and threatening each other. Then the police walk the person before the courts, and they're freaking out and hurling, you know, epithets at the guy and each other. And it's just not a sensible, orderly, mature environment that we're creating. It's a sensationalist spectacle that we're putting on for the benefit, I guess, of the media. Now, as someone who works in media, do I want to get photos of people accused of particular crimes so that you can match the photo to the story? Absolutely. It's important that you can confirm that this is the actual person, but we can do that inside of the court. Do I think perhaps that they should allow photographers in court to take a photo? We could look at that. The judge might have some security concerns. But we got to stop this practice of demonizing people before they have a chance to show that they did nothing wrong or before they have a chance to be properly tried in court. We've already tried them in the court of public opinion. We've seen the images and we spread them all around, right? And it's really reflects poorly on us as a society. We need to grow up with it. And I'm very pleased the police are going to stop doing that. And to the extent that Wayne Monroe, the Minister of National Security, had anything to do with it, I'm fine with that. I think it's perfectly reasonable. If you read the Police Act, the minister can make recommendations as to what goes on. He can make recommendations as to police policies and procedures, right? And so if he recommended to them that they stop that, then I really do appreciate that. If that was just Paul Roll saying, you know, we're not doing this anymore, then that is something that I appreciate as well. I always thought it was a poor practice, and I'm glad we're stopping it. We'll have less sensational photos, and video footage for you, but I think in the interest of the public good and the good of protecting people's reputations, it's a positive move that we have stopped that. All right? Particularly if a guy's like, what do you have, like 2 ounces of marijuana? You know what I mean? And you have like all the DEU guards are dragging him in like he's El Chapo. You know what I mean? If he's that dangerous, then take him to the back like you're supposed to so that nobody know who's what or who's coming. Right? You can still call us and tell us, hey, there's a murder arraignment, there's this arraignment, that. By the way, I also don't agree with the practice of running to every arraignment that the police shoot out there. A lot of it, I don't care about. $3 million, or however many million dollars that they found worth of weed, right? The $3 million. I'm curious about that. I want to know about that. The suitcases full of cash. I'm very curious about that. I'm very curious about these murders. But they have some real petty stuff sometimes. Oh, that she forged checks. We got to come to see that? That she forged checks? I mean, is that a thing? Are we talking hundreds of thousands of dollars? They take a clerk at a law firm to court. Oh, she is accused of embezzling $100,000, and it's some thing where the money was held in escrow, and maybe they moved it and put it back, and it's never some juicy thing, and you're pulling us from, and I know, you know, we want the news, but you're pulling us from doing actual work to wait outside court for 2 hours for you to bring in these people who, I'll be honest with you, you know, we're not that interested in covering. Some of it we are, and we appreciate it if you tell us the high-profile ones, but there's a lot of real basic stuff that we are not interested in getting, all right? But I'm happy we got some of the stuff so far, and I think that you can always get the picture another way, even though it's very easy when they're going through the front of court. Like the lady who was kidnapping the kids, like, I want to see her picture. So if I see her rolling through my hood, I know to keep my guard up, right? Anyway, that's what I have to say about that. Now, let me say this, all right? So, again, Wayne Monroe's responding to this thing, or he's responded to this thing with him having the commissioner of corrections sent on leave. Now, please don't style me, right? Wayne Monroe said, oh, Cheryl Darvill sent him on leave. Be serious, right? We're not stupid out here, all right? That's not going to work anymore. So Wayne Monroe said, and Cheryl Darvill did send him on leave. She's the acting PS Minister of Ministry of National Security, and she sent him on leave without cause. Didn't explain. She just said, you're on leave. You'll get your full salary. If you have any questions, contact me. We expect your full cooperation, right? Yeah, I got a question. Why am I being placed on leave? You never said, right? So you're placing me on leave, but you never said, and I'm supposed to believe that you're the one who's responsible for this. When Wayne Monroe released a statement saying, today, Commissioner of the Bahamas Department of Corrections Charles Murphy was placed on immediate administrative leave pending a full investigation into several issues. The three areas of immediate and greatest concern are, one, the briefing produced for me, not Cheryl Darvill, the briefing produced for me by Commissioner Murphy disclosed on the face of it that the BDO, the Bahamas Department of Corrections, is not being operated in accordance with the Correctional Services Act. It came to my attention that the BDOCS, the management of which is vested in Commissioner Murphy, may have breached an order made by the Supreme Court ordering the release of a prisoner who had been committed himself for failing to obey an order of a Supreme Court judge. Okay? Came to my attention. It was reported to me that the aforesaid prisoner had subsequently tested positive for infection with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It came to my attention that during his stay at BDOCS, the prisoner was quarantined in a cell with three other individuals. He says, in the face of these concerns, Commissioner Murphy was directed to proceed immediately on administrative leave. So if you're trying to get me to believe that somehow the acting permanent secretary of the Ministry of National Security acted on her own without
the knowledge of the Minister of National Security without the direction of the Minister of National Security to send the Commissioner of Corrections home, you're talking to the wrong guy. All right? I'm not the guy. So Wayne Monroe sent him home. Let's just establish that clearly. Now, what's the problem with that? There are several problems. The first problem is that if you read the Corrections Act, the Minister of National Security does not appoint the Corrections Commissioner. The Prime Minister does, on the advice of the Minister and the Public Service Commission. Okay? Therefore, if you're not the guy who puts the commissioner there, then perhaps you should consult with the guy who put him there before you send him away from that post. Now, I don't know that the Prime Minister had knowledge of this. He hasn't spoken to it. I hear things that suggest that he did not. But I think the Prime Minister is the one who needs to take the lead on that, particularly in a matter as serious as this. You're accusing Murphy of breaking the law. All right? That's the first issue. So we haven't heard from the Prime Minister on this. Yes, the Minister of National Security, the Commissioner reports to the Minister of National Security, yes. But the seriousness of the position and the nature through which the Commissioner is appointed, I think, calls for deeper consultation than this before you're placed on leave. And we should also consider, well, if you read the Constitution, there's a particular process for removing the Commissioner of Police because it's a constitutional post. The Corrections Commissioner isn't a constitutional post, although the Constitution does require that you have a prison service. There's a process for removing the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. There's a process for removing the Justice of the Court of Appeal. All right. It doesn't speak to any process of removing the Corrections Commissioner. And I think that there should maybe be some consideration to kind of strengthening the process through which the commissioner is removed. And I don't know if Murphy did do these things that it's alleged he did, but they're very serious allegations. All right. Here's the next thing that's the problem with this, right? So when Murphy was promoted in 2019 to Corrections Commissioner, if you'd recall, like there was a huge search and they had an international search that Marvin Dame said they were conducting. I think it was 2019, early 2019? Yeah. Correct me if it was 2018. I'm thinking it's 2019. But they had a huge search, and they said that they're looking all over the globe. Remember this? Marvin Dame said, we're looking all over the world to try to find the new corrections commissioner. All right? Murphy had applied, and at the time, Murphy was an assistant commissioner of corrections. It goes commissioner, deputy commissioner, assistant commissioner, all right? So Murphy was an assistant commissioner, if I recall correctly, and he was promoted over to deputy commissioners. Who were those deputy commissioners? The deputy commissioners were Bernadette Murray and Doan Clear, all right? They were ordered to go on vacation, and Murphy was appointed acting commissioner of corrections. They sued the government, saying that they believe it was politically motivated and that they were incorrectly moved to the Ministry of National Security from the prison without their approval. The case of Cheryl Grant Thompson, who's now a Supreme Court justice, being passed over for the post of Director of Public Prosecutions for Jamaican Vannette Graham Allen, was litigated, and it was found that Cheryl Grant Thompson was incorrectly moved, and that the public service rules are clear that you can only be transferred if you agree to the transfer. They said that the same principle applied to what happened with them. Who is Cheryl Grant Thompson's lawyer? Wayne Monroe. Bernadette Murray and Doan Clear are represented by Monroe and Associates, Wayne Monroe's law firm. Monroe says he doesn't recall appearing in court. However, Monroe and Associates filed suit naming the Minister of National Security, the position Monroe now holds, in that suit. So you are on one side of this very same issue, and now you're on the exact opposite side of this same issue, and you've reversed the decision of your predecessor, a matter that is still before the court, as I understand it. So you're too close to this for to come away to just saying there's nothing there. There's too many strings attached, right? Here's the other thing that makes this strange, okay? So the prisoner in question, I'm not calling names because I don't know that all these allegations are correct, but I know who we're talking about and I know why that person was in prison. The prisoner in question we're talking about has openly associated himself with the Progressive Liberal Party, and his attorney, who is threatening to file suit about the COVID-19 quarantine issue and the failure to allegedly abide by a Supreme Court order, his attorney is a former Progressive Liberal Party MP. You're a Progressive Liberal Party MP. The Progressive Liberal Party MP, former Progressive Liberal Party MP, campaigned for the Progressive Liberal Party, openly was a poll worker for the Progressive Liberal Party. So, again, I would say that this matter should have been left to the Prime Minister, and it should have perhaps been more deliberative in nature. So Murphy's going to sue, and it's just one big convoluted mess. Now, here's what we know, right? Monroe sits in cabinet, and there's a manual of cabinet ministry, manual of cabinet and ministry procedure, right? And it speaks specifically to do with conflicts of interest in cabinet, okay? There's also a constitution that speaks to it as well, all right? So if we go to Rule 32, I see the call, we'll get to in a moment. And, you know, Wayne Monroe may be perfectly right in all that he's done and everything like that, but it just, right out of the gate, it doesn't look good. Rule 37 states, when a minister possesses directly or indirectly an interest with conflicts or might reasonably be thought to conflict with his public duty, or improperly to influence his conduct in the discharge of his responsibilities in respect of some matters with which he is concerned, he should disclose that interest to the Prime Minister or Cabinet. So again, the question arises, did the Prime Minister know about this? Did he understand Wade Monroe's role in this, as insofar as his law firm represents these people? And he's taking this action on behalf of clients of the law firm he just worked at 2 weeks ago. Rule 42 states that a minister must not allow the pursuit of his private interest to interfere with the proper discharge of his public duties. So again, and I'm not accusing Monroe of anything. I know Wayne Monroe. We're cool. He's a brilliant lawyer. Again, the appearance of you operating in what could be your private interests interfering with the discharge of your public duty arises, and it should not. And so, to me, there's still a question there of what really is going on, and I'm keenly interested in understanding what the Prime Minister has to say about it. Does it rise to the level of, well, Wayne Monroe should resign or be fired? I'm not saying that, right? I'm just saying we can't just go, oh, well, it is what it is, and that's it. It's hard to It's hard to extract him from this without some hooks still being there, is what I'm saying. We can go to the phone line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Ron. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And good afternoon to the nation. Several points you mentioned I'd like to target one.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning with where you indicated that the prime minister would be the person who appoints the commissioner of the Department of Corrections,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yep.
Right. And that the minister, in your view, should not have the authority to dismiss the individual, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't want the conversation to become premature in nature,
mm-hmm.
and conspiracy led for persons who are on the other end listening. And so, I want to interject that first and foremost, the individual has not been dismissed based upon the
he's been sent on leave. Yeah.
From the minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the prime minister's involvement does not become necessary. However, in order for the prime minister's involvement, if it does rise to that level, to become involved, an investigation is going to have to be done, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Which is what is being done currently, based upon what the minister espoused in his interview with the press, right?
Agreed. Yep.
And so from that perspective, certainly the right procedures and the right approach is being taken, right?
I don't know, Anton. He got a letter. I've seen the letter that Murphy received from right. acting permanent secretary Cheryl Darvill, and right. she gave no reason for him being sent on leave.
Okay. Well,
so I don't know that the proper procedure was followed.
No. I wasn't speaking from the details in the letter. I was just speaking from the procedure in terms of having an investigation done to determine if it rises to the level of the individual possibly being dismissed. But as it relates to the details that was espoused by his attorney, mm-hmm. that's a completely different set of considerations, which I'm not speaking to.
Yeah, I didn't right? get into that, if you'd notice.
Right, exactly, which is why I didn't go there either, right? Because I do believe, if I would just offer one set of input on that, I do believe that any letter giving directive for an individual to be removed from his role should give some level of reasoning as to why,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's only right there and just. Now, moving to your last point that you were making as it relates to the conflict, you know, which is why the same cabinet procedures also requires that an individual sets aside his private interest
mm-hmm.
in any company in order for him to take up his role as a cabinet minister.
Correct.
So that there isn't a conflict of interest.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which William Monroe would have to have done in order to accept the role as Minister of National Security.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
And so clearly in a small society, one such as ours, it will come up, it will become a common practice or even a common accusation
yeah.
that there is a conflict because you would have experienced as a successful firm or as a leading mm-hmm. private firm in the country, you would have experienced a great deal of cases.
And that's why the Constitution speaks to it. That's why the manual speaks to it, because right. they figure it will arise in a society right. as small as ours.
Right. And so Mr. Monroe QC would have satisfied his provisions as it relates to setting aside his private interest. And I'm certain he would have had to declare, realizing what he would have been dealing with, which none of us could speak to, as you said in your communication, you can't speak to whether he informed. You only made note that you suspect that the office was not informed as to his involvement prior. Monroe is on record also stating that he did not handle the matter, and the court dockets would reflect exactly who handled the matter, although it was his firm that dealt with the matter. And so on, to avoid the conspiracy theories, I believe that before the matter is even aired any further on the air, I believe that the decent thing to Monroe and the others involved and the responsible thing to do would be to get the answers to those questions that you began putting out as to whether Monroe disclosed to the cabinet, which I don't know how you would get that, but
right.
also as to whether Monroe would have disclosed his position to the prime minister, right? Which I think would be more easier to ascertain.
I'm working on the prime minister. Yeah.
Right.
I'm working on that.
And so until such time as that information is ascertained. I believe that this matter is too sensitive a matter to bring to the public ear without having the full and comprehensive or definitive set of answers to those very important questions. But I believe,
well, if it's so sensitive, then why is Monroe keep talking about it if it's so sensitive?
I don't know, but from what I heard, he spoke to it twice. I guess while he was addressing other matters, persons of the press would have questioned him on it. And I'm happy that he's not running away from the media. I'm happy that he's taking the responsible, accountable, and transparent approach, and in seeking to keep the media informed as to whatever questions they're seeking the answers to. I appreciate that very much, Juan, especially considering where we just came from with the former administration, who was not accountable, who was not transparent, and who in many instances misled the press deliberately. And so, Juan, okay. I believe this represents a new day. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity, and God bless.
Okay, appreciate you. Nah. You can't expect me not to talk about it when you release big statement detailing all these allegations against Murphy. Ain't nobody make you release this long, detailed thing. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Are you ready for school? Well, Marco's Pizza is here to help. Get ready for the new school year with our Back to School Special. With our quality key ingredients, enjoy a steamy, mouth-watering, extra-large, one-topping pizza. One center square or a one-liter cooked product for just $18. Kick off the semester the primo way. Perfect for you and your family. Every store, every day, the Italian way.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAO, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAO. Growing wealth for future generations.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. I'm Juan McCartney. We're talking about a couple of issues. We will talk about the ICIJ. I'm not going to do you like that today. All right. This is one I wanted to see at least one more bank lane shuffle with some of the last government. Oh, Lord. I'm truly hurt, but I'll live. This says, good day, Juan. Remember how prison chief Charles Murphy was appointed by former minister Marvin Dames and put aside Claire and Murray? Now it's the opposite time of Murphy to suddenly go on administrative leave, and it's called foul, political, and victimization. Now that shoes on other feet and change of government, this foolish must not stop on both sides. He recommended him. He didn't appoint him. It says, brave, gonna have to keep the reins tight on Monroe. And here's what's true, right? And to paraphrase AZ, the great hip-hop philosopher, right? It's hard to keep people close together. All right? He didn't say it like that, but I'm paraphrasing. I can't say what he said on here. The Flyest, AZ Nuz, Stillmatic. Check it out. Classic. It's hard to keep people close together, right? So you got 22 people in cabinet. It's going to be difficult for you to keep them all together. That's why I would have gone with about 13, 14, right? You get 10 more people, 8 more, 9 more. It's hard to watch everybody because ultimately you put them there. Now, it's hard. You got 32 people in the house. You got to watch all of them, including the speaker. It's difficult. All right? So that's the challenge of getting these big majorities and having a huge cabinet. It's going to be difficult to keep everybody in line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello. Good afternoon. No. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. You let Anton put all kind of ninja talk on you just now. Anton didn't even know how to defend the situation.
He ain't put nothing on me. I'm talking about it. You can't tell him it's too sensitive. That's not going to happen.
Right? He couldn't even defend the situation because it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
That's simple. It's a conflict of interest what's going on right now. He only called for his voice to be heard. But he know what's going on, and it is a conflict of interest with Bean Monroe, and Bean Monroe should have excused himself. That's simple.
Yeah, I agree. That would have been the clean thing to do. Just be like, you know what, PM, I got concerns, but listen, I know, like, I'm tangled up in this thing with the former commissioners of Murphy and all this, so here are these concerns. I'd like you to deal with it, all right? So nobody come to me and say it. You dig what I'm saying? Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you, Vaughn.
Hi. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm following your discussion here on the Commissioner Murphy matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I haven't heard, and I consider these to be really the most critical issue of this situation. I haven't heard much said about the fact that justice sent a release order to the prison that was not carried out under Commissioner Murphy's leadership.
Now, you said a justice sent a release order to the prison, right?
Right.
I haven't seen any release order from any justice. No one has produced one for me. Now, when you get released from the prison, when you get released from the prison, no matter what the judge says, they're not going to let you out the prison unless you have a release certificate.
Right.
Now, I don't know that that was produced.
Okay. But the matters you raised, you did so based on the letter that was released from the National Security Minister, right?
Yes.
In which he mentioned that that as being one of the concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, my point is, it was sufficient there for you to mention the other issue. I see that to be the most critical one and one that you could easily verify a lot more easily than the whether or not Monroe disclosed his concerns to cabinet.
But I can't just explore one side of the issue, you know.
No, you can't.
Murphy's under investigation, and we will... If we get the results of those investigations, we will be talking about it. But that's just one side of it. The other side is Monroe. Murphy's on leave because of these allegations. Now he's being investigated.
Right, right. But that side of it concerns me greatly because Murphy doesn't have the authority, if it is in fact what is alleged, mm-hmm. to disregard an order from the court.
He wouldn't have the authority. Now, did he do that is the question.
Yeah. Right, and if he did, you know, I want to understand the law regarding that. And also, I mean, you withhold a Bahamian in your custody, a few of them, and you took, it seems, no measures given, you know, the COVID circumstances we're in. And so anybody could be arrested, right? You could walk out the studio now and be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to exercise negligence in your arrest and you come out with COVID tomorrow, I mean, that's just unacceptable. There ought to be measures that they take under those circumstances. And even with the prisoners who have lost their rights and freedom ought to be protected.
I totally agree.
And so, you know, we can't easily disregard these issues. Those concerns you raised concerning the minister, I think, ought to be looked into. But we have to look into the full matter, right? The minister didn't go looking for mercy. This issue came to head that brought the Murphy commissioner to the minister's attention. And so, you know, I want to know where he gets the authority from to disregard a judge's order and to mix people up and have them coming out of his prison sick.
But we don't know that's the case. But I thank you for calling, but we don't know that that's the case. Okay? So I hear your point. If when you call me, you don't have to tell me it six times, you know. I usually catch it the first lap. It says, Wawan, I'm impressed that regard the former minister, Wawan, I'm impressed that regard the former FNM Minister Ellsworth Johnson has comments and Brave Davis and the Haitians, I'm impressed that you actually took the time to investigate that erroneous comment yesterday to your show and also called many other talk shows. I'm beginning to believe you may not be a closet PLP supporter, as many contend, after all. No, I am. I am. Deep in my heart. I'm a PLP. They got a. Is there like a pledge that they say? That's. I say that at night before I go to bed. It says as long as Wayne Monroe sits at cabinets, there'll be issues like this because of his extensive legal representation against the government. Yeah, and Wayne Monroe sued the government a lot, and been successful at it a lot. Juan, somewhere in the midst of this is what sort of job is Murphy doing? Have you received any reports glowing or otherwise? Maybe this investigation will guide us. I haven't received glowing reports about Murphy, but I'm not going to sit here and say he violated any court order without evidence to that effect, all right? Because we're saying he's breaking the law, if we're saying that. It says, hello, Juan. Thank you for holding all the politicians' foot to the fire. No one is above the law. Something smells fishy about the whole thing, and it ain't the fish. This says, Hi, Juan, I agree with ending the policy of parading persons charged with the crime before the public. I'm curious, though, was the perp walk just a policy or was it enshrined in law? It was just a policy, as far as I'm aware. It says, you can accuse Wayne Monroe of violating protocols and conflict of interest, Juan. He's not above criticism or reproach. I could accuse him, but I don't know that he did, and so that's why I raised the questions. But there appears to be a conflict, all right? You must avoid not only conflicts of interest, but you must avoid the appearance of conflicts of interest. We'll take one more call. We're going to talk about the ICIJ on the other side. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, I'm Juan.
Hi.
Juan, I forgot to make one point.
Sure.
Could please, 30 seconds.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I look forward to Juan because, first and foremost, a wrong should not remain to stand just because that wrong happened under one administration, who is no longer the government of the day. The government of the day has a responsibility to investigate the circumstances under which the now commissioner of the Department of Corrections was promoted. And if at the end of that process, one, it is found that it was wrong, that it was irregular, and that it was against the regulations, it ought to be addressed and corrected forthwith. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you, Juan.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I suspect a court will ultimately decide that. Let's go to the news break. We'll be back on the other side.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes out the washer?
No, wait, just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I was a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crock Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. All right, now, let me clear some of your texts, and then we're going to talk about the ICIJ. Just because, you know, it's out there, and it discloses to me that there's a great deal of do what I say and not do what I do among the major powers of the world when it comes to smaller countries, right, who are trying to come up and who don't have the tools of industry that these major countries have to rapidly develop and grow our economies. We're just trying to get it where we can get it, you know? It says, really, really, Anton, telling you something is too sensitive to talk about? I like Anton, but please. Says one, if the shoe was on the other foot, do you think Anton and the PLP apologists would have taken this approach? I mean, I get it. You want to not talk about it. You want to obfuscate. You want to say, well, what about Murphy? What about? Right? Sure, we could deal with both at the same time. We could deal with the allegations against Murphy, and we could deal with Monroe's involvement. Both at the same time, because we're intelligent people. In all of this, let's not forget that some COVID positive was quarantined in a cell with three other non-positive people, that in itself warrants suspension while it's being investigated. I don't know that occurred, is what I'm saying. That's what he said. So I think the cabinet could have been rotated, divided into two groups, the first half to 2.5 years, the second half 2.5 years. That's where everyone gets the exposure. And the PM will be able to better manage his cabinet, just my thoughts on how it could work. That's not, in theory, a bad idea. One thing I hate with these politicians is every time they're called out, even though we all know the sky is blue, they'll tell you it's yellow, and they leave it as that. We take it or leave it. Hi, can we call it a super spreader cabinet? Not Gussie May. The name is outdated. Says, hey, Juan, what about wanted posters? Do they apply similarly to parading people before the court? They need to look at wanted posters. You know what? They perhaps possibly do. That is fuzzy, I'll be honest with you, in terms of your reputation, you're in the wanted poster. But if it's a matter of last resort and the police have no other means through which to track you down, then I could see why you would use a wanted poster. This says, hello, Juan. Murphy's lawyer, Ramona Farquharson, spoke to the allegation last night on Shanique Miller show behind the headline, and that's fine. Right, and Shanique can have anyone on her show saying whatever they'd like. That's her prerogative. Me, I tread carefully, all right? Because people like to, they have a target on me for some reason, and The Guardian, right? Even though no one successfully sued me for anything, and that's mainly because we do tread carefully. Juan, do you buy the reasoning that the current government is reviewing promotions to ensure that it was done on merit, or simply a move to block persons perceived to be FNMs so as to ensure room is there for PLPs? I'm not speaking about political appointments. It seems to me that the new norm is to move out your opponent's people to put your own in. Man, I can't wait for the IMF to correct the nonsense. Our leaders won't. Here's what I'll say about that, right? I find that curious because if you're speaking to me about Adrian Gibson and his issues with the union in terms of the promotions at the Water and Sewage Corporation, and you're telling me that, okay, those are on hold, right? Until we look at what's really going on. It's unfair to a lot of people involved, but I could see you taking a beat because those promotions don't go through the Public Service Commission. However, if we're talking about the wider public service through, so she's Minister of State of Public Service, what are you saying about the Public Service Commission when you do something like this? It's a constitutionally required body that the Constitution lays out its appointment and much of its functioning. It's been the mechanism through which we've done public service promotions since independence. And now you're questioning the public. What are you saying about the Public Service Commission that you need to review? You, the government, need to review their work, because would they not have vetted these people? Would they not have ensured that there was money to pay these people, that they were deserving of these promotions? Are you saying the Public Service Commission has been publicly, politically manipulated? Is that what you're saying? Because if that's what you're saying, then why should we have any trust in the Public Service Commission at all? So I find that odd. If you're talking about stuff that doesn't fall under the Public Service Commission, I could understand that. If you're talking about public service promotions exercises, I don't understand it. All right? Take a call real quick. Talk about ICIJ. I'm going to talk about this today. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Brother Warren. I hope you're doing well.
I'm pretty good.
You know, Brother Warren, I would like for all of the members of Parliament and the Power Bank and all of those who make up a part of the government to take a recording of the acceptance speech by Chester Cooper. Said that we ought to be, you know, gracious in our victory,
right,
and not vindictive and that. And you know, I when I heard about this incident, I just wondered if Mr. Monroe listened to what was being said. Listen, we can't be doing the same thing. Yes, there may have been some things that didn't go well, but do an investigation and then at the end of the day make your decision. But just to outright come and do something like that, to me, it's not fair. And to say that your law firm that you did not represent them, but somebody out of your law firm did. I mean,
that's no excuse either. Yeah.
That is no excuse. That is your law firm. Whether who out of your law firm, it came out of your law firm.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to all Mr. Monroe, you know, listen, tread carefully, because yes, there may be a small opposition, but civil society, we are watching. We are, and you know, we will hold your feet to the fire, and we will make whatever issues that is going on. You will hear from the people,
mm-hmm.
and like the people say, listen to the people on the ground. When the people on the ground start to speak about Mr. Monroe, listen. And I am surprised that the Prime Minister, he would not have consulted with the Prime Minister first, you know, to get some insight before he made his decision. Seems to me that Mr. Monroe is like he just doing whatever he wants to do, man. And Mr. Davis, you better rein these people in, because listen, one apple could spoil the whole bunch. Have a good day.
Okay, that's fine. We're not going to litigate that any further at the moment. This is one who's in charge of the Public Service Commission. Boy, I want to say Teresa Delevo, last I heard. I want to say, could be wrong. All right. This is Juan, this is the same man you call smart. What did those promotions have to do with voting for the FNM? As bad as they got beaten this last election, it's obvious that nothing was influenced people to vote for the last government. Yeah, I mean, he's a smart guy, but I find that strange. I won't lie to you. Like, to just come in and go, whap, they're all on hold. Like, it's on what basis? something nefarious went down? What are you saying? Like, governments are continuous, right? If one government goes through the process of giving you a promotion in the public service, then that should not be impacted by another government coming in. Sets a bad precedent. Says even the EAP procurement contracts are on hold. That's weird to me because won't the various ministries know their requirements? Yeah, absolutely. All right, one more call. Let me do ICIJ. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Warren.
Hey, how's it going?
You said, so you know, Raymond Roy should have consulted with the prime minister. Let him do it. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the first time, it's like minister had a trend to his ministers now to just be the final say. So Finland, Papua, Ingram, they, when they come, any big firing or reshuffle, they did it. They tell you, I'll put you here. I'm the prime minister. I don't want you in this post. I'll put somewhere to go. It's like this is the first time we have in this big shuffling because the ministers being so busy went into the press and they say, I advise the prime minister or advise the prime minister, I can do this. Like, it's like the prime minister don't exist no more. I will cut this out and be there. If you don't want, if you didn't want the minors in this, I come to the prime minister's office. Let me, it's like, well, Papa wanted to redo the brief force, right? Tommy did it or Papa did it, St. James, and went to the school. Papa, right? Papa did that. He picked Greensley.
Yeah, well, he could pick Greensley. Only the Prime Minister can appoint the police commissioner.
But look like Marvin James appoint Paul Rudd. Because he get Paul Rudd more to sign off all these stupid things that fool, looking fool, that James make him do ungodly things.
Okay, we're going to just stop at the ungodly. Okay, so the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists have released what is called the Pandora Papers. All right, now the Pandora Papers is a trove of documents of 11.9 million documents leaked from offshore financial centers, all right? And it shows that a lot of offshore financial centers are keeping money from very famous world leaders, very prominent world leaders, all right? Celebrities, okay? In the billions of dollars, all right? So, what's the problem? What's the problem? Rich people are putting their money in offshore financial centers. Why do we care? Why is that a bad thing? All right. Here's the issue, right? So you have the major powers of the world, particularly those in the European Union. But I won't just put on the EU, even though they've been the most aggressive lately. The major powers of the world have, through conquest, through innovation, right? Through population growth and just industrialization, created economies of scale that have provided a great standard of living for a great many people. At the same time, some of these major economies, particularly throughout Europe, have developed a blend of democratic socialism that has caused them to have great strain on their resources. So they are constantly looking for money. All right? Now, you don't have to have a hugely democratic socialist society in order to need money, right? The U.S. has forms of democratic socialism, but not as far as the European Union is concerned. You just want money. I got bills to pay, right? I'm a large country. How do countries make money? The main way that large developed countries make money is through taxation, income tax, sales tax, whether that's federal or at the state level or provincial level, all right? And corporate tax is another one of those avenues. So what the major nations cooked up, all right, this was the G20, I want to say the G20, not the G7. The G7, the group of seven, the group of 20. You're talking about 20 of the biggest economies in the world, okay? The group of seven is like seven of the biggest economies in the world. Italy, Japan, UK, US, France, Germany, Canada. Right? Not China, but major economies that represent hundreds of millions of people. All right? So the group of 20, in conjunction with the OECD, says, we believe what's happening is a process called base erosion profit shifting. Now, some egghead in an office in Brussels, likely, came up with this, right? You're going, what the hell are you, base erosion profit shifting? What is that, right? So it's very simple, actually. I don't know why they call it that. It's when you're eroding your tax base, right? By shifting the money that you would be taxed on from a high tax jurisdiction to a low tax jurisdiction. Where are the high tax jurisdictions? Well, it depends on how you look at it. But EU, high tax jurisdictions. Now, I'll undergird this with, let's not choke on the hypocrisy that London is one of the major offshore centers in the world, that the United States, South Dakota, Nevada, Delaware, are some of the biggest offshore centers on the planet. But the low-tax jurisdictions are us, right? Trinidad, Cayman, Bermuda, Bahamas, right? Financial centers that grew their economy at a time when they didn't have any sort of minerals, any sort of assets, the population to create economies of scale, right? Trinidad has oil, but that's a more recent thing. We grew our economy through banking, right? Banking and tourism. And a lot of the others, just banking. Primarily, right? And we attracted people, firstly, by offering secrecy. Now, that could be a problem. I get it, all right? So the G7 put together, the G7 and the European Commission, right, put together what's called the Financial Action Task Force. Financial Action Task Force is the anti-money laundering and anti-terrorism watchdog of the world, all right? So they're responsible for a lot of the legislation we have and shedding a lot of business from our banking sector, all right? But they're, on the one hand, they were concerned about money laundering and terrorism. They're now concerned about tax avoidance. They've been concerned about it for some time, but they're just really driving it home, all right? Yeah, base erosion and profit shifting. What'd I say? Base erosion, profit shifting? I left out the and? All right, that's fine. You can nitpick that. You made me lose my train of thought. Okay, tax avoidance. So now they're on tax avoidance. They're saying that we have citizens who are very wealthy who are putting their money in jurisdictions that are not taxing them, whereas we have huge bills to pay and we want to tax those people. So in order to tax those people, we want to know where they are and we want you to not do business with them, or at the very least, disclose the names of these people or know the names of these people for certain, so that if anything arises, we can be clear on where the taxes should go, all right? So one of the last salvos that we had was a blacklisting by the European Union, or the European Commission. And they said that we need to strengthen our legislation in order to correctly identify the beneficial owners of the companies that are doing business in the Bahamas. Okay? So we therefore passed the Register of Beneficial Ownership Act, along with a slew of other legislation. And the Register of Beneficial Ownership Act is if you're involved in certain businesses that are in the that are doing business in the Bahamas, you have to disclose who the beneficial owner is, not the who's on the director of the company name or whatever like that. Who actually makes money off this, right? Whose money is this? Now, you would understand why lots of people would be uncomfortable with disclosing that. Maybe you don't want people to know you got this kind of money. You don't want people to know where your money is. It's your money. Right? You don't want to get taxed on this money. I understand that. And that should be your God-given human right to try to avoid excessive taxation. That's my opinion. All right? We passed the Register of Beneficial Ownership Act, and at the time, people in the industry said two things. They said, we have to do it. Okay? We have to do it. Because if not, we're going to be subject to extraordinary due diligence. We're going to lose correspondent banking relationships, which would cripple us, right? Not only for our foreign clients, but for us here in the Bahamas. So they said, we have to do it. And they also said, this is going to hurt us. So said, so done. So the ICIJ has found that billions are funneled into these offshore centers. And many of us who are in the low-tax jurisdiction, the so-called low-tax jurisdictions, are not the ones benefiting from it. Not to the level that some of these major countries are. All right? I'll just give you a little some sweeteners for what they found, just some juicy tidbits, right? So the ICIJ says the leak records reveal that many of the power players who could help bring an end to the offshore system instead benefit from it. I'm going to repeat that for you. The leak records reveal that many of the power players who could help bring an end to the offshore system instead benefit from it, stashing assets in covert companies and trusts while their governments do little to slow a global stream of illicit money that enriches criminals and impoverishes nations. Among the hidden treasures revealed in the document, a $22 million chateau in the French Riviera, replete with a cinema and two swimming pools, purchased through offshore companies by the Czech Republic's populist prime minister, a billionaire who's railed against the corruption of economic and political elites. More than $13 million tucked in a secrecy-shaded trust in Great Plains of the United States by a scion of one of Guatemala's most powerful families, a dynasty that controls a soap and lipsticks conglomerate that's been accused of harming workers and the earth. Three beachfront mansions in Malibu purchased through three offshore companies for $68 million by the King of Jordan in the years after Jordanians filled the streets during the Arab Spring to protest joblessness and corruption. All right? The leak records come from 14 offshore services firms from around the world that set up shell companies and other offshore nooks for clients often seeking to keep their financial activities in the shadows. The records include information about the dealings of nearly three times as many current and former country leaders as any previous leak of documents from offshore havens. Okay? In an era of widening authoritarianism and inequality, the Pandora Papers investigation provides an unequal perspective on how money and power operate in the 21st century, and how the rule of law has been bent and broken around the world by a system of financial secrecy enabled by the U.S. and other wealthy nations. Now, why does Juan say that this points out how other nations are quick to say, do X, Y, Z, but do not hold their same corporate entities and citizens to the same standard? All right, so again, as I said, I'll actually just read this to you. We got a phone call. Who wants the phone call? Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello.
Sparky, we're going to get back to you, buddy, okay? We're talking about something serious here. If you got some insight into offshore financial centers, et cetera, please feel free to call. I just can't take the stream of consciousness at the moment. No offense. All right. It says, in December 2018, the Bahamas enacted legislation requiring companies and certain trusts to declare their real owners to a government registry. The island nation was under pressure from larger countries, including the U.S., to do more to block tax dodgers and criminals from the financial system. Now, let me stick a pin in that. All right. Remember I told you the EU blacklisted us a couple of years ago? We had to go through all sorts of hoops and measures to get off that blacklist. Well, the EU also blacklisted several U.S. territories, right? So while we jumped through hoops, right, to make sure that we were compliant, here's what you do when you got clout, right? The United States Treasury Department said that the EU adding American Samoa, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands to their blacklist should be ignored by U.S. financial institutions. And that ended that. All right? We didn't get to do that because we don't got clout like that. Right? We had to do the register of beneficial ownership, all right? And all that data goes into a private closed server, so they tell me, that the registrar general has that you can't access online to a crack and leak, but it don't matter. People don't want the government knowing that that's their money, all right? In December 2018, the Bahamas enacted legislation requiring companies and certain trusts to declare their real owners to a government registry. The island nation was under pressure from larger companies, including the U.S., to do more to block tax dodgers and criminals from the financial system. Some Bahamian politicians opposed the move. They complained the register would discourage Latin American clients from doing business in the Caribbean. One local attorney said, "The winners of these new double standards are the U.S. states of Delaware, Alaska, and South Dakota." Months later, a confidential document indicated that the family of the Dominican Republic's former vice president, Carlos Morales Troncoso, had abandoned the Bahamas as a go-to sanctuary for their wealth. For their new refuge, they chose a place 1,600 miles away, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The family set up South Dakota Trust, league records show, to lay away various assets, including shares they'd held in a Dominican sugar company. The family did not respond to questions about the assets moved from the Bahamas to South Dakota. The Pandora Papers provides details about tens of millions of dollars moved from offshore havens in the Caribbean and Europe into South Dakota, a sparsely populated American state that has become a major destination for foreign assets. Over the past decade, South Dakota, Nevada, and more than a dozen other U.S. states have transformed themselves into leaders in the business of peddling financial secrecy. Meanwhile, most of the policy and law enforcement efforts of the world's most powerful nations have stayed focused on, quote, traditional offshore havens, such as the Bahamas, the Caymans, and other island paradises. The U.S. is one of the biggest players in the offshore world. It is also the country best situated to bring an end to offshore financial abuses, thanks to the outsized role it plays in the international banking system. Because of the U.S. dollar status as the de facto global currency, most international transactions flow in and out of New York-based banking operations, the correspondent banks. Okay? Those are the relationships we cannot afford to lose, because we won't be able to conduct international transactions without a great, great deal of effort. You'd be shut out for the most part. Like, Iran still functions. They have a major problem. They SWIFT, the world banking system, part of the Iranian nuclear sanctions, they don't have access to SWIFT. Cuba's also shut out, right? Because of the U.S. dollar status of the de facto global currency, most international transactions flow in and out of New York-based banking operations. U.S. authorities have taken action over the past two decades to force banks in Switzerland and other countries to turn over information about Americans with overseas accounts. But the U.S. is more interested in forcing other countries to share information about American banking offshore than in sharing information about money moving through U.S. bank accounts, companies, and trusts. The U.S. has refused to join a 2014 agreement supported by more than 100 jurisdictions, including the Cayman Islands and Luxembourg, that would require American financial institutions to share information they have about foreigners' assets. All right? Year after year in South Dakota, state lawmakers have approved legislation drafted by trust industry insiders providing more and more protections and other benefits for trust customers in the U.S. and abroad. Customer assets in South Dakota trusts have more than quadrupled over the past decade to $360 billion. So they're sucking up the money from smaller nations and putting it in these trusts, and we lose those banking relationships and all the fees and jobs and spend associated with it. All right? By 2020, 17 of the world's 20 least restrictive jurisdictions for trusts were American states, according to a study by Israeli academic Adin Hoffrey-Winogrado. In many cases, he said, U.S. laws have made it more difficult for creditors to put their hands on what they're owed, including child support payments from absent parents. All right? So that gives you an idea of where we are with this, right? We have major companies, and this focuses a lot on the U.S. Major companies, major players in the global financial markets are shifting their money to offshore centers in larger countries. Now, this is something they said we shouldn't be doing. Okay, this money still is not being taxed. So why can't we do it if you can do it? Just because we're small? Just because we're not powerful? I get it, right? He who has the power makes the rules, right? He who has the gold makes the rules. He who has the power makes the rules. But don't you want to try to be fair? I'm not saying we sit here and cry about it. I'm saying we figure out how to... We do need to figure out how to make it more attractive to invest in the Bahamas, right? And put your money here. But what I'm saying is that with great power comes great responsibility. So the European Union's outsized focus on us small countries who aren't trying to engage in no criminal activity is onerous to us, and you don't impose the same thing on your people, right? You don't, Luxembourg, for example, right? Switzerland, you don't go through all this with them with the same energy you do with us. London, right? So again, what I'm saying is what we want to seek is a sense of fairness in all this. So you can't come lecturing and finger wagging at us and telling us we're not serious, we're not doing this, when you guys are engaged in the same thing. It doesn't make any sense, right? It's got to be do as I do, not do as I say. There's much, much more information in this, but I just wanted to highlight to you directly the link to the harm this does to the Bahamas while others benefit, all in the guise of base erosion and profit shifting. You're still not collecting the taxation. We got a phone call? Sure, why not? Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCartney. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
All right. It's very interesting that you and Mr. Fitzgerald are lying pretty much on the same topic. It's a very, for the life of me, it's very difficult time to learn on these, all these intricates and all of these words in the financial industry, but it's, from what I'm gathering from you and Mr. Lange is that a lot of these big first world countries are actually doing the same thing that they're accusing the Caribbean of. I think they put the pressure on the Caribbean because they want the business and they want to gobble up everything. They already got most of the industries.
Right.
And places like the Bahamas and a couple other countries in the Caribbean just trying to find a little niche in the industry so that they could survive, and they want that too.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they just want the money. They claim it's for one thing.
Yeah.
They just want more taxation. We got bills to pay. But to me, it seems like they just want the business.
That's all they want, and they want their citizenry to prop up their countries and live them lavish lives and actually pay their taxes when their citizenry trying to find a way out to actually save themselves some tax dollars and enjoy the beautiful weather in the Caribbean at the same time, they have a problem with it.
Yeah, absolutely, my brother, I think. And, you know, I get it, right? Because the industry people say, look, what y'all crying about, right? It is what it is. But that's for y'all to go figure it out. For my part, I'm going to say, I think it's unfair, right? And I know you guys have to do the work and actually figure out how to make this work and make it attractive for people to put their money in the Bahamas, et cetera, even though we have these restrictive covenants. But for me as an ordinary citizen who, and a lot of people don't understand that they won't feel, that they will feel the absence of that money being here through jobs and through the stimulation of the economy and other things that come with it. You'll ultimately feel it. Right, so it's not too hard. It's not just some rich bankers who are gonna feel it. Like it's all that entails with them spending salaries and hiring people, et cetera, supplies. The people come here; they want to look at their money. You watch The Wire, right? Where Marlo Stanfield, a notorious drug dealer in Baltimore, complained that he had too much money, but he couldn't put the money in U.S. banks. Right, because it was dirty money, and so they figured out a way to launder the money through a church to like Martinique, and he gives him a paper, his friend who set up for him gives him a paper, and he goes, "See, there's your money," and he was like, "What are you talking about? Where's my money?" And so he goes to what I believe is Martinique, and he goes to the woman and he goes, "Hey, y'all got my money in here?" And she shows him his money. So he had to buy a plane ticket. He had to get a hotel room. He had to get some taxis. He had to eat, right? Marlo don't drink. So, you know, but still, people are going to want to watch their money. So they come here. I'm going to come for a week, bring the family down. We're going to rent something at Albany. It's going to be good. We get some extra jobs. We'll spend money in the economy. We'll spend money at the grocery store, at the restaurants, et cetera. We'll play some golf, right? Just for a week, I want to. The Dominican ex-vice president. I just want to see my money real fast. I'm going to look at it for a few minutes and find out what you've been doing with it. I want to look in your face. I don't want to do this over email, bruh. All right, so again, do we sit here and we cry about it all day and go, oh, woe is me? No, but at the same time, you can call out an injustice when you see it, a perceived injustice when you see it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCarthy.
Hey, how's it going?
You ever notice that years ago, most of the offshore banks used to be downtown?
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice lately, most of them moving down Cable Beach, out by the caves,
mm-hmm.
out by the Lifet Key round, about more closer to where they live,
mm-hmm.
in Lifet Key? But, Mr., you know, I want you to explain this to me, too, because this is something that always bothered me. Most of these countries, they act like they try to stop wars and want peace all over the world, when they are the ones that make sure that the wars continue going on. Because, for example, in Afghanistan and so forth, if you look at those people and how they live, most of those Muslims, they don't have no factories making airplane jets and gun factories and so forth, right, mm-hmm. right, McCarthy?
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But when they get the guns and the jets from and everything to bomb these poor innocent women and children, they don't care about the lives of people. They're basically over there for what they could get from those countries, namely oil, gold, diamond, some kind of natural resources, what they don't have in their own country. So they keep the wars going on. I mean, they stopped the war. But where did the guys buy the guns from?
Well, listen.
They buy the guns from the same country with saying they're trying to stop the war.
Right.
Because, okay, they said Malcolm moved out of Afghanistan the other day. The president said they've been over there too long because they've been over there for 20 years trying to stop this war from after 9/11.
Yeah.
So we're moving all our people back home. But we still need our people in our army. So we need a war somewhere to send these soldiers to use these guns. What we dog on making these factories. We got to do something with these bombs, what we keep making in these factories. And these planes got to fly up in the air. We need aircraft carriers. We need all of this kind of thing. We don't just need to make these things to keep them in the warehouse. We got
to
try.
I got to go to break, Spark. You got to learn to wrap these things up, man. I get what you're saying. Look, and it's just reality, right? And I'm not mad at anybody. The biggest supplier of arms to Saudi Arabia is the United States. The biggest supplier of arms to Israel is the United States, which I get. If I were Israel and I were surrounded by potential enemies, I would want to tool up too. Don't know that Israel needs nuclear bombs. The biggest supplier of arms to Iran is France, right? So the U.S. is imposing sanctions on Iran. Biden and, Macron, right, are having lunch. Meantime, France is selling jets and rocket launchers to Iran. Anyway, we got to go to break. We'll be back on the other side.
MyGateway is the centralized, safe, secure way to access and pay for government services online. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and log in to request a police character certificate, renew your passport or driver's license, and more. Receive emails confirming requests and alerts when documents are ready. You must have a valid government-issued ID in order to collect documents. MyGateway is fast, easy, and convenient. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and register today.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAO, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAO. Growing wealth for future generations.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bombers. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. This is Ari the Pandora Papers 1. You see how the EU, including the UK, have been clamping down on us, and come to find out UK territories like Cayman et al. Have been doing most of the tax haven dirt. These developed countries squeezing small countries like ours so they could slip in and lap up that sweet tax dodger coin. Right. And again, you mentioned Cayman, and they do target Cayman a lot. But Cayman has the protection of being a United Kingdom territory. We don't. Says one, what Sparky spoke of is actually true, and it's contained in the Iron Mountain Report. In order for world governments, world peace is needed to take control via the UN. Okay. One, can I have a copy of the documents, please? I don't need to send it to you. Just Google ICIJ. It'll pop right up. ICIJ. The entire thing. This is not the Spider-Man quote. What? With great power comes great responsibility. It can't be the first time that... Spider-Man the first time, that's it? This says... One, the OECD can come after low-fence countries like ours because instead of creating a vibrant, strong surplus economy that can fend these clowns off, our leaders are busy seeing who they can hire in the public sector. Man, we're finished. It says, one, these Pandora Papers are very misleading, in my opinion. It makes it appear as if places like ours are engaged with nefarious characters, while Delaware and Nevada them doing the same. Also, they focused on one or two individuals, while the majority of the industry is operated by compliant, law-abiding individuals. Further, the history of trust in financial centers is just tossed aside as if these vehicles weren't created for legitimate and good reasons, such as protecting assets. These people got to stop. Thanks. I mean, I didn't take that away from reading it. I took away from it a very clear agenda to paint the U.S. in particular as a bad actor in these matters. All right. And the EU. But I'm glad that it all came up. Even if Ryan Pinder's not happy, they're talking about who beneficially owns and data protection and all this. It says, Juan, did you see that oligarch Haitian family that controls everything in Haiti is also in the Pandora Papers? Yes, I was reading about that. There's a lot. So it's because whenever the Dems, aka the liberals, are in charge, they go after these offshore accounts. When the GOP is in, they leave it alone. Example, South Dakota is a GOP state. European Union is liberals. That's all I always say. When the GOP is in, God bless the Bahamas. All right, man. If you want to rationalize it that way, I'm not going to fight you. Okay, let's... Juan, not the egghead. Yeah, it's an egghead. Let's go squeeze these small countries. You know, what are we going to... We already had all this other stuff going. You got something new? Yeah, yeah. Base erosion and profit shifting. We're going to... Oh, I like it. I like it. Let's hit them with that. Make them figure out what's going on with that while they're blindsided, scrambling. We're going to allow it to go down in our territories. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hey, how's it going?
Rachel, thank God for listening. Good day to you. Listen to all over the world. Listen, you to the... You did that. You did hear. But they didn't say why they wasn't gonna have the speech on the throne like the normal way. Do it downtown. They said because of the COVID and the speech on the throne. Should we be expecting the Governor General or whoever read it to maybe say something what us parents should be expecting with COVID situation like face to face learning or we gonna help the homes them more to be able to do online learning? Should we be expecting to hear something like that? One more thing. You was talking about civil. It sounded like you were talking about persons having to sue the government or reports where people go in to sue the government because they feel like they're being victimized and things ain't done the right way. I wish we could have a policy where, however it is now, whatever they call it, a policy or a rule, where these ministers who and these permanent secretaries who make these decisions, what people who ain't be in the college and university, who ain't smart like them know, well, they ain't going about it the right way, that they sue them personally and not the government of the Bahamas because they're making a mockery. The system, they keep suing. Yeah, the people them to sue because these people who are supposed to be smart permanent secretaries and ministers, they go about doing things and following what politicians them say. So I think it's time we start suing them personally, the permanent secretary and the minister. Let it come out their pocket, and they wouldn't be doing these dumb things would they know better. If this was a private business, they would have never tried these things would they be doing over the years. Keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so they're not having... the opening of Parliament and Parliament Square, they claim because there may be inclement weather, which they also say it's due to the demolition of the Churchill building and some other thing. I think it's with COVID-19. I don't get it. I'm not tripping off that. I think they should have it in Parliament Square, but really, Parliament is wherever the Governor General says it is. So, they probably told the GG, hey man, we're having it Bahamar. So, just like we had the swearings in. All right. Okay, so, what do we do about this? About the EU squeezing us, right? And the US has squeezed us, but they've been, you know, a partner with us in this, okay? We've got to, at the same time, comply, like we did when we entered into this 6,000 tax exchange information agreements, right? But at the same time, we've got to try to keep our industry a step ahead of everybody else. So we don't have the same tools, the same benefits to offer as South Dakota, Alaska, these places in terms of secrecy and all this, and you can actually hide away funds. So what I suggest, right, is you do several things. We've already agreed to a global corporate tax rate, right? I'm hearing 15, maybe it's going to be less, right? So you can no longer say that we're a low tax jurisdiction, not compared to the U.S., where they're from like 0 to 20, depending on how good your accountants are, right? So we can no longer be called a low tax jurisdiction. So you don't have that. You can no longer say that we're hiding assets and money laundering and terrorism financing and NGOs are being used to funnel money and all that, because we've disclosed all that. We've done all that, right? So while complying and we get them off our backs with that, we do need, by the way, a new EU blacklist came out today or yesterday, and today, and we weren't on it because we got off it last time. So at the same time as complying, right, we need to figure out innovative ways to market our industry and to have unique products that people see in the Bahamas as being beneficial to their interests. We also need to capitalize on our tourism sector and linking that with the financial services sector. All right. And we've got to create more avenues for people to openly invest and put their money in the Bahamas. All right. Because we need the jobs. We need it. We ain't got gold. Right. I know we got aragonite. When you go get it, let me know. We ain't got oil. Right. We don't have all the tools that all these industrialized countries have. Right. So we got to do what we can to survive, because we're going to be underwater soon anyway due to climate change. Juan, do you think Ryan Pinder might have to recuse himself if he ever worked for any of these people setting up their trust to put their money? Possibly. That's possible. When you have attorneys who work in the private sector and then they go into government, it's always possible that these conflicts are going to arise. All right? We're out of time? Okay. We got to go. We'll talk more about these things another time, but I just wanted you to understand what was going on with the Pandora Papers. That's in brief. It's very extensive. I didn't do it justice, but I just wanted to help you understand where the Bahamas kind of fits in. All right, that's it for the show today. You guys take care out there. Have a great day, Bahamas.